You are listening to Fanboy versus Fanboy. Your regular host is Brian Kilby. I am JD Church. I will be filling in for him today. With us, we have our regular panel of what we call experts. That's going to include Chris Triplett. Hey, Chris.
Hey.
Chris McFeely.
Yeah, yeah. How y'all doing?
And Ender.
How you doing? I hate intros.
It's sort of awkward. It's always like, I don't understand what we're doing. We're always
every show is somebody's first. You have to let the new listeners know who we are.
I know.
Since we don't have the hyped up intro.
Listeners.
Well, if we just had the A-team intro, we wouldn't have to worry about it because that explains the whole show for you.
That would be excellent. Actually, I'm working on something like that for new Soundwave, so we'll see how that goes. But anyway, welcome to the show. This week we'll be discussing various topics within the comic world, because, hey, that's what we do. So let's start off this week with a little bit of news out of the DC universe. McFeely, you want to give us the lowdown? Are you up on this?
Just the basics of it. Basically, there's been a bit of a restructuring, a shift of power, as it were. I'm not entirely aware of the full implications of it, but essentially, the current what's his current title? It's weird. He's not the editor in chief. I was a little bit misled by that. I'm just looking it up. This looks really good. First 30 seconds, and it all goes wrong.
I sort of threw that at you, so you know, you can...
the current executive editor, Dan Didio, has been promoted to co-publisher with Jim Lee, he of X-Men and Wildcats and Wildstorm fame, while the living legend himself, Geoff Johns, is now the quote-unquote chief creative officer. Now, exactly what that means, I'm not entirely sure.
I thought that's what
because I mean I was the first. Well, I was the first thing I thought, and I saw a couple of people asking the question as well. Was is that just a fancy term for editor in chief? And it doesn't seem to be because DC doesn't have an editor in chief. Well, Didio wasn't the editor in chief because there's a separate group editor for Vertigo and for Wildstorm. So there was always somebody above all three of them. So he was never the editor in chief. But Didio's position was equatable to what Quesada does over at the Marvel Universe, you know, editor-in-chief. Mm-hmm. That is his title. And I'm wondering, essentially, if Didio's move to co-publisher means he is no longer creative director, and Johns is now in that role, but with this new title. This has probably been explained in detail somewhere, but that involves reading, and I don't read things without pictures.
I mean, none of the stories that I read seem to indicate that there was much better of an explanation of what that was actually going to mean. Mm. I mean, not that I'm aware of. I mean, anybody else read anything?
Just the announcement.
I'll take that as a no. So, it's kind of an interesting move. So I don't, again, with the title, so I'm not really sure where they're going with it. It's almost, again, like DC's really trying to reinvent itself and keep itself on the cutting edge, but I'm not really sure how this plays into that. I mean, certainly it's fine to have, you know, Geoff Johns is probably the best thing they've got going.
Yeah, I mean, promoting Geoff Johns to a position that gives him more creative control can only be a good thing.
Yeah, so whatever they want to call it, as long as he's got a decent amount of creative control and is, you know, helping drive that part of the ship, I mean, it can't be a bad thing.
I just don't want to see him not being used, I guess, like, you know, like work on, like, you know, projects that he wants to work on. Like Flash is coming out soon. I think like in April the new Flash series will come out. Does that mean he'll be like only on it for like so many issues and then they're going to hand it off to somebody else?
Well, he's writing the 26 episode bi-weekly Brightest Day series, so he's already got that on his plate, and he's still going to be writing Green Lantern. So
I figured he'd be done with Green Lantern though.
No, I believe he says he's got plans up through the 70s at least.
Oh really? I was thinking he'd be done after Blackest Night.
I don't think it means that. I mean, I think my assumption, I mean, and also it's not like Joe Quesada doesn't do things either.
No, no.
You know, I mean, my indication would be is that this is, I mean, this is just another move to try and give him a little bit more creative control or creative direction for some of the lines. So, and you know,
if he's the guy who's got the unifying vision that they're going with right now, like if they all sat down in a meeting last week and were like, you know what, this is the man who, you know, has all the marbles, so maybe we should just let him exercise that kind of control, because that's where we're pulling the ideas from anyway. Maybe that's what the fancy title is for, is like guy who comes up with everything.
Yeah.
Well, he's already doing that. He's been doing that.
Well, yeah, but he might have wanted, you know, a job title and a paycheck that reflected that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's not a paycheck. I'm
think
sure
about Jeff Jones
this
is
year,
whenever
we're giving out titles instead of Christmas bonuses.
Yeah.
The thing about Jeff Jones is when a Jeff Jones book is late, that's just because Jeff Jones has been busy writing another book.
Right.
Compared to like a lot of guys who just deliver late because they're off doing in Hollywood or whatever. It's because Jeff Jones is busy writing more comics for you. So it's always, I always find it, I mean, maybe people disagree, but I always find it very hard to begrudge a late Jeff Jones book, Flash Rebirth number 6, next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But because
he doesn't begrudge it, but he does remember.
But yes, an elephant in that regard. But I know it's because it's late because he's been busy writing other comics that I have read and enjoyed, and I always find, you know, so, and that he's probably one of the few writers you can say that about. You know, I mean, really, let's be honest here. Nobody gives a fig about Dan Didio and Jim Lee being promoted to co-publishers. The news here is Jeff Jones moving up in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, surely, yeah, exactly.
I don't understand the Jim Lee. I mean, that just came out of nowhere for me. I thought, wow.
Where did he come from? Like, what has he done recently? He drew All-Star Batman and Robin.
When did that come out? 2 years ago?
And, I mean, is he publisher or president of... He was up in the upper echelons of Wildstorm, which is a dying imprint, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And he's been working on the DC Universe MMO.
That's what he's been doing. That's basically what he's been doing. That's why we haven't seen him. That's it, yeah.
They're promoting him just enough to get him out of the way, I guess.
I mean, it seems like, I mean, if he's been publisher of Wildstorm, and I can't remember if he is, I mean, honestly, the Wildstorm imprint is dead on its rickety, wobbly feet. So I don't know why they've done that, but, yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that it'll be a bad thing or anything. It's just a little inexplicable. I wonder, I mean, I think probably all of the really manic DC fans are throwing their hands up to the heavens for the suggestion that Dan Didio will be slightly more removed from the creative process, if that's what this means.
Well, and that's what I would assume.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you know, it's
what
like...
What does a publisher do?
They take phone calls and...
Oh, no. That's a secretary.
No, I mean, they take phone calls, like the up, down, the top down phone calls. They take the calls from Warner Brothers, you know, that's what I mean. You know. And then they write memos and important publisher things. They go to Comic-Con.
They get paid a lot of money.
Right. They get paid a lot of money to be, they get paid a lot of money to not be writers and editors at other comic book companies.
Yeah, because I mean, who's Marvel's publisher, you know? Exactly. Nobody knows who a publisher is.
Yeah. No.
You don't know who the publisher is because the publisher has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, they make sure the artists and the writers don't get too much money.
Oh, so speaking of artists and writers, Ender, what'd you read this week?
What did I read this week?
It is there.
I read some Hulk. I read Hulk 206 and Hulk 20. Which ones? There's like 18 Hulk books out right now.
It's because it's the Fall of the Hulks.
Yeah, no, there's lots of Fall of the Hulks-y goodness. They were good. They were fun reads. They're very, you know, I think it's officially reached the point in Fall of the Hulk. So it's like, if you didn't read last issue and you come in now, it's just going to be like, yeah, good luck, man. Mm. You know, we're going to start hitting people and throwing people in. I mean, I was literally, I turned a page. I was like, what the hell is Hank Pym doing there now? And he was just like, yeah, he came here because it's stuff you did last issue. It was like, you weren't around last issue. It's like, yeah, but it was my cue, man. Come on.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Read Deadpool 19.
Woohoo!
Captain America. which is I kind of dig the thing they're doing with the 50s Captain America right now. It's kind of fun.
And, yeah, I read Cap in the trades, so I try to avoid what's going on in Cap. But it's been a little hard to avoid what happened in Cap the last little while with the whole tea party.
No, tea bag. You said it right. It's okay.
It's politics, and I don't.
Captain America, I don't think you read politics. You're missing a lot. Yeah, you can't get around that. X-Men, I read. Mostly pretty good. Wreckers last week.
Yep.
Came out.
I missed it. I couldn't find a copy of it.
Yeah, that's the nightmare of it.
Yeah.
But,
Bumblebee,
which was bad. Bumblebee is just...
I couldn't understand what the hell was going on.
That's the problem.
And maybe that's what the problem was. I mean, because I'm like, why are we stressing it? Who is this girl? And didn't Bumblebee just meet her? And why is he stressing about what is he doing? Is he going to kill her? I mean, what?
I know, he's been hanging out. Like, he spends the whole thing in her backyard, feeling bad about himself. Wheeljack is the only character I care about in this whole thing, because he actually has character. And he's a dick, but at least he has some character.
Yeah, how dumb are the humans? I don't know.
Well, yeah, they're very just doing all this dumb stuff. It's like, this must be like the idiot division of Skywatch.
God, I'm like, the entire issue had me scratching my head.
Did anything happen last issue?
I don't.
Is this the Bumblebee series, like the miniseries?
Yeah.
What issue is it up to? What number?
Three.
Yeah. I think I read two. I was thinking that in two, that, like, are they trying to make Bumblebee bad and gritty or something? I don't know what's going on with this.
But he's not. He was a complete wuss.
I know.
I mean, the entire issue.
To be one. Could you be any limper, dude?
Weren't they trying to... Listen, the issue I read, they were trying to capture Blur. Because they were going to trade him to the humans or something. I don't know. I had no idea.
They do in the first 3 seconds. They make out I almost thought that was going to be the bent of the series. It was going to be Bumblebee hunting down Blur.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was weird. I was like, okay, maybe that'll be interesting. But it was like, hi, Blur. I don't want to get caught. I'm going to get caught. Oh, I'm caught. It was like, okay, I'm on page 3. Oh, wait, nothing else is going to happen in this comic. In the first issue, I was like, yeah, there's almost no action in this one. In the second one, there was a little bit. The only action is Blur shooting Bumblebee. And in this one, there is none. There is no action.
No. I mean, even the point at which you thought there could be some action, like when she goes in to get the device or whatever, and you're like, or when they decode the Autobot hidden language or whatever, and you're like, oh, this could, oh no, they're not doing anything.
They're not doing anything. Oh. Well, and the whole premise is so in question, because that one tiny bit of action they were forced to have for their story is Blur shoots Bumblebee in the little plate he got from Skywatch that is controlling all of them.
Right.
And of course, lo and behold, delicate electronic equipment doesn't work when you shoot it with a cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't seem to occur to any of the Autobots to shoot the other badges.
Hey, crazy.
But you know, that just drives me nuts. I mean, that's just silly.
That hadn't occurred to break me.
Nobody tried to break the things. Nobody?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just retarded.
And so I haven't read All Hail Megatron.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would if I read All Hail Megatron, would it make any more sense to me?
No, but I actually enjoyed All Hail Megatron is actually worth reading, especially in trade. I think it was a little rough to read as single issues, but it's a good trade. So anyone who hasn't read it, it is actually really good, especially
considering the events of All Hail Megatron. I can't figure out why this little girl would be so trusting of a gigantic killing robot.
Yeah, you'd think she'd know better, but apparently not. No, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. I know the art works for some people. It doesn't do much for me. The whole thing is just, a wash. And then, did anybody notice the covers?
Seems like they belonged on last issue.
Yeah, they have a cover of him with Scavenger behind him, which is last issue. And then there's a preview for next issue, which is him in the backyard with the little girl in the briefcase. And I don't know about you guys, but either that means they have these like staggered wrong, or I got to tell you, if he's going to spend all of next issue in the little girl's backyard, I'm going to be pretty cheesed off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm quite enjoying Bumblebee, personally.
What about it are you enjoying? I'm curious.
Well, as far as this issue goes, I don't care that there's no action. I understand what I'm reading here is a character piece about Bumblebee. It's a study of the character traits that Bumblebee has that makes him such a personal little guy that humans automatically like him and he likes them. The character traits that allowed Bumblebee to be popular enough to be voted for by the other Autobots, but the irony is that they're the very traits that make him ill-suited to the job they've picked him for.
But isn't it also sort of inherent fail that Bumblebee was never like this at all before in this universe?
Well, I'll give you that.
Okay. I mean, like, this is like
but I'm beyond trying to find
it. It has nothing to do with anything else that's going on.
Yeah. It's a characterization very much drawn from older interpretations of Bumblebee. I don't deny that, but I'm beyond trying to expect that from IDW.
And when I say nothing happens, I don't just mean nobody shoots anybody else. That's not what I'm looking for in a comic. But even as a character piece, I feel like nothing happens. He sits around in this girl's backyard and feels bad about himself.
Yeah, there's literally
That was characterization movement. That was just like self-flagellation. We have been staring at Bumblebee's navel since issue one, and it's just not moving.
So is it like a Dreamwave Transformers comic? Is that what you're saying?
No. Hey, well, I think if you hit me and Chris up on that, you're going to find an unreceptive audience.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
But,
And to backtrack, Deadpool 19, how about Hitmonkey? Come on.
Come on,
that is going to rock. I can't wait.
I think particularly with adding of Spider-Man's credibility to this comic and then bringing out Hitmonkey is what makes it so funny.
Yes.
Did you read the Hitmonkey one?
No, I haven't. I'm now going to go look for it.
Yes. It was an old one. No, see, I wouldn't actually recommend.
Okay, Deadpool versus Hitmonkey. Like that's the kind of thing you expect to see. But when he drags Spider-Man into it, now that's funny. That's like now like we have credibility that has to fight Hitmonkey because they're stuck with Deadpool.
Yeah, I mean the Hitmonkey thing looks like it'd be a lot of fun in Deadpool, but I actually wouldn't recommend tracking down the one shot.
Really?
Because it plays the concept perfectly straight. There's nothing funny about the one shot. It's about a hitman who goes on the run, gets stranded in the wilderness, and befriends a monkey who watches him as he gets better, honing his body back up and copies his move. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles without the mutagen and a monkey instead of a rat. You know, it's not.
That's
funny.
Not as much fun. It's like
that
you
sounds
don't,
pretty awesome, actually.
I don't want to. Well, that character.
Now, if the monkey would train some people, that would be funny.
Yes. Yes.
But that's where the potential, that's where I think the potential for the comedy now comes in Deadpool now that it's an established force and the idiocy of the concept can come through.
It's so much fun to watch Deadpool be like, okay, here's the deal, Spider-Man.
All right.
Like, screw you, I'm leaving.
Like, F you, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
If Deadpool takes it seriously, you know, something weird is going on. So that's like the fundamental strangeness of the story in the Deadpool comic, but I don't recommend the one shot.
Okay. So, McFeely, what you got for us?
I got a big stack this week. What do I have all together here? I got to start with Tiny Titans from DC. I don't know if anybody else reads this, but if you don't, you know, you're missing. If there's an ounce of joy, of innocence and joy in your cold, dark hearts, you should read Tiny Titans. It's one of the Johnny DC books for younger readers, but it just won an Eisner. It's that good.
Wow.
And it is essentially about the Teen Titans, all the different generations of the Teen Titans, original Haney Titans, Wolfman Perez Titans, Jeff Johns Titans, current Titans, just as children, living their lives in Sidekick City.
And Sidekick City, I like Sidekick that. City.
Wow.
And it's by Art Baltazar and Franco, the guys who did Patrick the Wolf Boy, and it is just, there at the start, there was something of a question of whether of who the book was really for. You know, if it was an odd little humor book that would only work for adults who were already fans of Titans, or if it really was for children. And as it has proven over the last 2 years, because this is issue 25 that came out this week, it's really for both of these people. They have a fan art page in there with lots of art from children, and the damn thing won an Eisner, so you know the adults are paying attention as well. And this issue is actually co-written by Geoff Johns. Because it's about bringing Superboy into Tiny Titans for the first time.
Doesn't he have enough to do?
You would think. That's it. But it's like, you know, he just flies into the treehouse one day and it's like, "Hi, Superboy. Hey, Connor. You're back. Yeah, I was away for a while. Where you been? Oh, you know, but I'm back for good now." that's the intricacy of a Tiny Titans.
Is he Superboy with the black shirt? Does he have the black shirt with the red S? Nice. Yeah.
I mean, the book's got running jokes as well. You know, very early on, they made a crack about how Wonder Girl's costume is just jeans and a t-shirt, and that was very early on, and then all the other Titans started wearing jeans and a t-shirt for a while when they discovered how comfy it was to fight crime in. So in comes Superboy in jeans and a t-shirt, and the joke comes back, you know.
Awesome.
If you have a shred of innocence left in you, seriously read Tiny Titans. I can't recommend it enough. If you like to laugh, every issue of Tiny Titans gives me a laugh. Absolutely.
Sorry, Andrew. I mean, okay, no.
That's right. I sit around watching cartoons all day because I'm so mature.
What else this week? What else? Spider-Man 1602, that wrapped up. Just a great little miniseries. Jeff Parker, who I was gushing about last week on Agents of Atlas, he wrote this, and it's the first good 1602 story since the original Neil Gaiman miniseries. It's just Spidey, and it's got the Green Goblin and Dr. Octopus and the Wasp and Giant Man and all just 1602 versions of them, and well worth a look. Inconsequential, but very entertaining.
Jeff it's been Parker so long also. Since I read that I can't remember. Was there a Spider-Man in the 1602 miniseries? The original?
Peter Parquois was running around in it, but he was only bitten by the spider at the very end.
Oh, so there wasn't a Spider-Man in it, and this is kind of like follows back to that universe. And
well, no, they did another miniseries called 1602 New World by Greg Pak.
I didn't read that one.
Absolutely despicable.
Aww.
It is wretched. And it introduces Spidey and the Hulk into the universe proper, and that is but that's all it is. It's basically what if Spider-Man and the Hulk existed in 1602. It's pretty damn heinous. And then Peter David wrote a miniseries about the Fantastic Four, which was fine, nothing special. So I mean, Spider-Man 1602 is the best 1602 mini since the original. And Jeff Parker also gave us Agents of Atlas versus Avengers, issue 2 of the mini this week. Giant Gorilla Man, can't go wrong with a giant talking monkey. What else do I have? Incredible Hercules.
I think we need to vote on that.
Yeah.
Whether or not you can go wrong with a giant talking monkey.
And the monkey doesn't get the vote.
No. Where does a 500-pound gorilla sit?
Yeah. Anywhere it wants.
Also, I got Incredible Hercules this week. It's the last issue of Hercules. Now, I have to admit that the only reason I started buying Hercules was because Agents of Atlas became the backup in it. But I always knew Hercules was a good series, and I always regretted not jumping on it when it started, so I have enjoyed these last couple of issues. This is the final part of a story called Assault on New Olympus, which is going to lead into a two-issue miniseries called Fall of an Avenger, over the next 2 months, in which well, it's not really a spoiler, it's completely telegraphed, Hercules is going to die. But as an Olympian, he's probably about as dead.
In Hulk, they're already referring to it in the past tense.
Oh, are they? Yeah, well, they're running a little bit behind. Yeah. I mean, but Olympians can't physically die. You have to molecularly, if I may just slip my nerd hat on for a moment, you do have to like either molecularly disperse an Olympian or bodily drag them to Hades for them to be considered dead. So it's like over in Siege, I'm pretty sure, well, depending entirely on how accurate or referential Bendis was when he was writing it, that there's two still alive halves of Ares just lying on the battlefield feeling pretty pissed off.
That sounds about right. And I didn't know you could take the geek hat off, so don't.
Yeah, you say, your geek hat comes off? How do you accomplish this?
As you will learn if you ever get talking about continuity in any great degree, it's quite startling sometimes. Yeah. Speaking of Bendis, I got his Spider-Woman this week as well, which is fine, but honestly not living up to what I hoped it would be. When I saw it was Bendis and Maleev, I really thought it was going to be a good show. But I've honestly come to the realization I don't give a flying crap about Jessica Drew, and I think I'm going to drop the book after the first story arc's over.
So the problem with it is that you don't love Spider-Woman as much as Bendis loves Spider-Woman. That's really what
the problem is. I think that is, yeah, part of the problem. I mean, it's a perfectly solid book. But yeah. Whenever, I mean, very little has happened in it. And nothing interesting character-wise has happened because I'm only realizing it now, but I guess I must just not care about Spider-Woman. I thought I did. I guess I'm wrong.
She's going to be crushed.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think the book's actually been in the solicitations past its seventh issue. So I got a few more this week. Blackest Night Flash, Geoff Johns again. Mm. Actually, not great. I was enjoying it. Miniseries. But it feels like this issue is only like half a story. I want to know what the hell's going on with Professor Zoom. And they won't tell us. And it feels like there's very little in this issue. This is like half a story and that's not going to be revisited in Blackest Night. So I was a little disappointed by that at the very end.
And that was, I was a little confused, I think, because maybe I missed issue two in the sequence, but maybe I wasn't. But was that not the White Lantern symbol that was over him?
No, he was always a Blue Flash. He turned into a Blue Flash in issue 6.
No. Not the Flash for Zoom.
Hang on. I'm going to crack the bag open. 2 seconds to find the issue.
I've actually been catching up on my Blackest Night a little bit this week.
We got an issue where, of course, he's hanging upside down or whatever, and then...
There it is. Hey, you're freaking right, it isn't all. What's all that about?
Yeah, that's
okay,
what
I
was...
Well, I didn't even see that before. That redeems this issue quite a bit. Holy crap, check that out.
Well, that can help. But, I mean, it's still sort of a WTF, because I don't know
Well, I mean, Zoom is an odd thing anyway, because, I mean, we don't quite have the full story, because Flash Rebirth number 6 isn't out yet, and this takes place after it. But, I mean, basically, the Black Lantern Zoom, because Zoom is dead, but because Zoom is a time traveler, it's been established through Flash Rebirth that he is going to come back to life at some point in time after Blackest Night, then travel back in time to now and be defeated by Flash and locked up. So there's the living future Zoom and the present day dead Zoom, both in this miniseries, which sounds a lot more complicated than it is.
You just lost me and half the audience.
No, come on. We just if you read the Superboy Blackest Night, it makes perfect sense.
I've been catching up a little on my Blackest Night, and last week I think I would have been giggling because that was too complicated, but I got all of that.
Yes. Yeah, that actually makes perfect sense. I think
geekness is totally relative. Like when you guys were talking Blackest Night and I didn't know any of it, it was just like, that sounds retarded. I go, what are you talking about? Now I read it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool.
I'm surprised that I don't like this book any better because like it's Geoff Johns writing it and it's Scott Collins doing the art.
Used to like Scott Collins now, but I've really come to like him in recent years.
I've been pretty big fan of his art since what was that Avengers miniseries he did?
Well, it was Avengers, a miniseries. He was just drawing Avengers for a while. Oh yeah, Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Yeah, it was like the kind of like Avengers Year One type of series.
That was a fantastic miniseries as well. Yeah. Did you read the sequel though?
No, I did not read the sequel.
Shit! Don't read
the sequel.
It.
Good. Don't read
no.
it.
No.
Okay, so it's bad.
I mean, it was exactly the same principle. But it just didn't work for some reason. Nowhere near as good as the Collins didn't draw it, but Joe Casey still wrote it, and I don't know why it didn't work. Okay, what else did I get this week? Power Girl. Power Girl. Power Girl is improving as it goes along, I think. The first couple of issues of Power Girl were a little dry, but with the last few issues, like the last two or three issues, I mean, I know Gray and Palmiotti usually deliver pretty solid superheroic stuff, but that's really all the early issues of Power Girl delivered. And with the last couple of issues, it's sort of morphed into a kind of sexy comedy adventure. And I really think that's what Power Girl needs to be.
Yes.
Now, I'm sure there are plenty of Power Girl fans who are absolutely outraged at the notion and who want the character to be able to evolve into something more than a pair of massive knockers. But it, yeah, you know, yeah. She doesn't have a lot to offer besides that. And it has, in the last couple of issues, I mean, seriously, if you don't read Power Girl, I do recommend going out and tracking down issue, this is issue 9 this week, but I recommend going out and tracking down issue 7 and 8, where she is courted by an alien named Vartox, who comes to Earth to try and get her to repopulate his planet. And it's just a two-issue sexy comedy in which they fight a load of alien monsters. And it was a really it was the best issue, the best story in the book so far. And I think it's kind of like, it reminds me a little of Dan Slott's She-Hulk now, because it is turning into a slightly sexy comedy.
Oh, you had me with Dan Slott's She-Hulk.
I don't want to oversell it. I'm just tonally.
Well, I want to like the book because I love JSA, and it's just another JSA book, in my opinion. But Amanda Connor, I love her art.
Yeah, I mean, she was let's be honest now. I mean, she's the selling point of this book. I'm pretty sure she's the reason this book has made it to 9 issues.
If she stays on the book, then that's a reason for me to get it. But if she's like gone in like 2 issues, I'm like, nah, forget it.
Well, yeah, but she's done all 9 so far, and. You know, if they can keep up this level of entertainment, I think I'll stick with it. But, you know, if it was just going to be like the same as the first half dozen issues or so, but without Amanda Connor, I wouldn't have stuck around for it. Amanda Connor is the selling point for Power Girl, but I think the stories are changing to fit the character and the artist a little better now. So I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. And Marvel's Eye of the Camera, number 6, came out this week as well. Oh, I think I have something in my eye. Yeah, I don't want to offer any spoilers up for this because I actually confirmed that some of my customers are listeners. Hi, guys! And some of our postal order customers only get their comics once every 2 weeks, so I don't want to offer any spoilers up for the guys who are going to be getting this next week. But you guys have read Marvels, right?
I read the first
Marvels and Ruins, like those two things.
Yeah, well,
okay, Ruins. Yeah, I've read those.
But yeah, now there are very few comics, or indeed films, or television programs, or fiction in general, that get me misty. But the original Marvels miniseries is one of those. The second issue with Maggie, the little mutant girl, when she leaves them that scrawled, misspelled letter in the crayon. Woof.
Yeah.
Always. No matter how many times I look at that page, it always gets me started. I don't know what it is about it, but, I mean, it's pretty, you know, stock or pandery or, you know, a pretty standard concept. But whatever it is about the way that issue sold that character and that concept and that world, woof. Always gets me.
I haven't read those since I had kids, but I'm about like 75% more softy now.
Oh, man.
I just break out now, I bet. Back then, I remember what you're talking about. I hadn't thought about it in a long time, but I bet that would totally get me now.
Well, Maggie turned up in issue 5. See, Marvel's Eye of the Camera is essentially Marvel's again, and it picks up from where the first Marvel's left off.
I didn't even know about this.
Oh, well, this is chronically late. This issue is about a year late.
See, this is what I get. Most of what I read is what Marvel sends me, so I don't go to the shop as much.
Who's writing it?
It's Kurt Busiek. It's Kurt Busiek. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, and man.
Not Alex Ross drawing it, but his name is Jay Anacleto. But yeah, the first 5 issues came out fine. Issue 5 was a little late. And then, wham, suddenly, issue 6, nothing happened. And it's essentially, it's the same principle as Marvel's. Phil Sheldon looking in on the Marvel Universe from where we left off in the mid-70s through this issue is the late 1980s when the X-Men supposedly die during the battle with the adversary in Dallas. And yeah, but in the course of the, basically, Phil has been asked to do a second book, and in the course of the story, he discovers that he has cancer, and he's in the hospital in issue 5, and Maggie comes in through the window, and I was like, oh no, and I was like, I was getting worked up again, I don't know. And I had a notion, I had a theory on how this was going to play out. I'm not going to say what the theory was, because when I then tell you that I was completely wrong, it would spoil it if I told you what my theory was, because you would go to the opposite conclusion.
But, damn it, McFeely.
But, this, I got something in my eye with this one, I got to tell you. So, yeah, this is the 6th of 6 issues, so maybe you want to wait for the graphic novel on this one, but again, I definitely say to read it.
I will get that. That's what I'll do. That's awesome.
And finally, the last thing for this week was Dark Avengers, number 14, which Ender beeped in the thing to chat about there. So there was that. Somebody else going on top for forever. Yeah. What about Dark Avengers 14?
Triple, did you read that?
No, I haven't. I've not been keeping up with Dark Avengers. In fact, I've just been catching up on stuff. So I caught up. I read Green Lantern 51 and the new issue of GL Core. Caught up on Amazing Spider-Man, so it's been kind of a bad comic reading week for me, actually.
Can go there. Yeah, I read. We'll come back, Triplet. We'll go. You go. What did you? Anything you want to pick up on as far as Blackest Night or?
Well, you know, they brought Parallax back, and then he's like gone in the next issue. Wow, that was a waste of time.
Yeah, that was. yeah, I thought so too. There was this whole build up about building, you know, bringing in, and then it was. Yeah, it turned out to be really kind of lame. And
I mean, he like murdered like the entire Green Lantern Corps before. He was the major villain for how many crossovers that they did for DC several years back, and then like within one issue, he's gone. Why didn't they just do that before to get rid of it?
I mean, yeah. I figured that
makes
that he was
of like when like Strife would come back for a comic after he'd been dead for 10 years. Like, it's Strife, not really. We're sorry. You're like, oh, okay. Guess I'll.
I figured Parallax coming back was going to lead into the next issue of Blackest Night. I forgot there was going to be another Green Lantern out before then. So I was a little taken aback by that. But then on the other hand, I kind of like that was a story contained within the pages of Green Lantern, so that if you're reading just Blackest Night, you don't have to worry about having read. You know, if you picked up the next issue of Blackest Night and bam, there was Parallax in a double-page spread at the very start of the issue, you'd have been like, where did that come from?
So I you still got to read Green Lantern, though. I mean, you can't really just
need to.
Because I think, like, if you didn't read Green Lantern, it seems like you're missing a lot of stuff. Because it almost feels like, I think Brian hit on this, like, either last week or week before, about how it's like Blackest Night number 6 comes out, and then, like, the new issue of Green Lantern feels like Blackest Night number 6B, you know? And then
some of them do, but not, yeah. I mean, there's a few issues of Green Lantern that I would think they might have to collect in the graphic novel when they do Blackest Night. But I don't think you have to read them the way you had to read Superman Beyond, for instance, whenever Final Crisis came out. Not to harp on Final Crisis again, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I read Green Lantern Corps, which was okay, I guess. Not great. There's been better of it.
It was a little Deus Ex for me at the end. It was just...
Mogo's magic spring.
Yes.
had Mogo in it. He improved it. Yeah. Mogo's a worthy lantern because he can cure you from anything, I guess.
Well... Mostly, you know, and that was the thing. That was the part that really got me, because it's like, well, he's cured mostly. You're still going to have to, you know.
I wondered if we were going to turn the page and Mogo was going to turn into a Red Lantern because he sucked.
Yeah, I was expecting that.
That would have been excellent, but they didn't do that.
That'd have been pretty freaking terrifying.
It'd be like a big splash page where he says, Mogo is angry, and that just ends.
That would have been awesome.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mogo is angry.
Yes.
Yeah.
But alas, no, they didn't.
Oh, yes. So.
But, okay. I don't think I read anything else. Dark Avengers. Okay, so thank you, Ender. Dark Avengers 14, in which Siege/Void is Yeah, I don't know what's going on. What is going on?
Yeah.
Well, I just felt like it, the only thing important about it, I thought, was that it kind of explains where the sentry is at during Siege and makes his behavior make more sense.
Yeah.
Like, reading it before this, I was just like, when did the sentry lose his spinoinkle? And this one was like, oh, it's right here. He lost it right here.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So yes.
That was kind of the point of this issue. And if you're reading Siege and wondering, like, man, when did the sentry go nuts? It was apparently here.
Apparently right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, I think this is my favorite moment I read in a comic this week. And I guess I don't know who's read this or not, but how do you know that they're having an affair? It's like, because I can see it right here, and points over to a little camera feed. Like, and there's the Green Goblin going, is that camera in their bedroom? Like, sir, that's the Avengers Tower meeting room. Like, oh, yeah. Like, so it is. That. That's where I sit, isn't it?
Okay, then.
Yeah.
Get some disinfectant.
As a book, it does feel like it's just sort of treading water because the story of the Dark Avengers is really being dealt with in Siege.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, the Sentry was kind of crazy already, anyway. But you know, it's like, here's why he's doing things like that in Siege.
Well, because Osborn keeps referring to having some sort of, you know, upcoming thing that I think clearly has to do with the Sentry, and I think that element's getting introduced here, too.
I just wonder exactly what the remaining issues of Dark Avengers can be about, if they're all supposed to take place before Siege happens. But then maybe they're not. Maybe some of them will be concurrent with Siege.
Yeah.
Maybe by the end or something.
Mm. Well, it's a fine book. I mean, it's a Bendis talking head book, and there's always dialogue worth reading in a Bendis talking head book, but
Does the Dark Avengers kind of feel like the opposite, though, of Thunderbolts? Because they were all Thunderbolts there for a while. I mean, they were kind of like Venom, and all those guys were tricked to be Thunderbolts, and now they're Dark Avengers. I mean, is it kind of like the flip side of the Thunderbolts? Is that what it is now?
In the sense that they've got the reign to act publicly, whereas in Thunderbolts they were the Black Ops guys.
Because, like, you know, like the original Thunderbolts, it was villains pretending to be heroes.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like going back
to the... And that's kind of like going back to the way it was. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a good way to describe it, yeah.
So,
not that it's, you know, not that Thunderbolts was really recognizably Thunderbolts by the time Warren Ellis was doing it, but...
Yeah, I quit getting it. I love the Busiek stuff and... what was it, Fabe Nick? Is that who did it?
Yeah, he did it after Busiek, yeah.
Yeah, I like that stuff. But when Warren Ellis got on board, I was like, I'm done. I gave up.
Well, first it turned into that weird superhero Fight Club thing.
Oh, the Fight Club book. I hated that.
Then Fabe Nick came back again to do New Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Which took, when did that happen? What crossover did that launch out of?
It had like a crossover with the Avengers in it. It's like Avengers and Thunderbolts. Yeah. Wasn't that how it started?
Yeah, I don't think that was one of a new wave of book that launched out of crossovers, funnily enough.
I don't know about it. But they did a miniseries of like Avengers and Thunderbolts.
Yeah, Avengers, yeah. Thunderbolts. I remember that. But then Fab Nick did it for about 20, 25 issues, thereabouts. The numbering returned to what it was before, and then Warren Ellis came on after that. But yeah. I enjoyed the Warren Ellis issues, actually. I mean, it was a complete... It wasn't what the Thunderbolts used to be about anymore, but I still found it an interesting book. Plus, he wrote a really good Crazy Norman. There was like one entire issue of Warren Ellis' Thunderbolts was just Norman Osborn monologuing to himself as he angrily stalked through the corridors of the mountain, slowly, piece by piece, putting on the Green Goblin uniform before him going mad and killing everybody.
I just had my problem with it is I felt like it was missing the point, because the whole point with the Thunderbolts is the crappy villains trying to become heroes. And now you've got your big name villains. I mean, Bullseye was in it, and Venom, mm-hmm. and I mean, yeah. I just said, forget this. I didn't even read it.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and of course, everything I read, we've already talked about. So, Awesome.
It was a busy week, and next week will be busier still.
It looks huge, huge.
Well, I'm not surprised. Like, well, I was moaning in the very first show about how few comics were out at the start of this month. And I mean, what did I have here? I got like 11 titles this week. So I'm sure I'm going to have about 15 next week. And I know I've got 2 graphic novels coming as well. So busy week next week.
Looking down the list here, was it Batman and Robin 9, Blackest Night, Green Arrow 7, JSA 3, another Deadpool, Deadpool 20. Yeah, I mean, if this list is right that I have, but it's probably not. Anyway, so this week, Crisis on Two Earths. This is the DC animated film. It's coming out this week that we were able to preview. So what do we think?
It's good.
Pretty damn good.
It's one of the better DC animated movies that's mm-hmm. come out, which is kind of getting hard to say because, how many of them are bad?
Yes, very true.
Yeah. Like that Batman one that they did that was kind of the anime. I didn't care for that too much.
Well, I enjoyed that one. I enjoyed that one, but
it wasn't bad, but it's just it made me want something like, you know, Bruce Timm style more. Yeah. You know, when the next
it's certainly the weakest of it's the weakest of all the ones they've done though.
I wasn't sure about using the Crisis moniker for it. I don't know if it quite fit the bill of being in the same line of what the comic universe considers to be part of the Crisis. Yeah. I always equate it like with the, you know, Infinite Crisis or Crisis on Infinite Earths or whatever. But I mean, aside from that, I mean, the voice acting was, as far as casting goes, was hit and miss. Like, I you know, definitely liked for Owlman.
James Woods.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was excellent. I thought that there were some points that was, I don't know. It was like trying to ask these really sort of semi-heavy philosophical questions.
Yeah.
And I feel like in some points it was just sort of glossed over. And like in the beginning when, you know, they're sitting at the, you know, in the room and Lex is explaining to them that he needs help on this other Earth. And Superman basically stands up and says, it's not really our problem. Why don't you take a hike?
That's Batman, isn't it?
Well, Batman does too, but even Superman does. Even Superman stands up and says, I don't really think it's our deal. And then Green Lantern pops off with, yeah, I think it's not really our jurisdiction. And then it's Wonder Woman that goes, well, they're in need. We ought to help them. And then everybody's like, yeah, we should go help. What? Like, that's persuasive? You know, like you're crossing dimensions and leaving your own home planet vulnerable to go to another place. And
oh, they didn't leave it vulnerable. They left
Batman was still there.
Well, Batman was just going to go, period.
No. No,
if you're going to leave somebody to protect Earth and our universe, really? Batman's the best choice.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I paid for the space station, everybody. I'm going to stay here, all right? How's that sound?
Yeah.
but by and large, I was there. I was there with it. I expect some of the continuity to be consistent. But, you know, I thought it was odd that Earth Prime in this particular DC universe meant something completely different than Earth Prime means in the DC main universe, which sort of threw me off as well. Because when they said Earth Prime, I was expecting that they meant our Earth, which is what it normally means in the DC universe. And so when it's this like burnout, you know, planet, it was kind of thrown off. So I don't know. I guess that
maybe it's next year.
Which they didn't even have to do that either, because with the way it ended where Batman sent it away, like he could have landed that thing in the middle of Times Square or wherever
equivalent. Yeah.
You know, and then had the same kind of shootout deal.
I did think it was funny they even sort of addressed this, that in the end, when they're gonna send one person, they send Batman.
Because he's Batman.
That's what happens when you let
Ian McDuffie write it.
Yeah. Yeah. No question.
I kind of feel like there's Superman standing there being like, yeah, I kind of got to pick. Clark could kick my ass if it really came down to it, probably.
Well,
you wouldn't think so, but...
To be fair, too, it took someone tech-minded, too, because they were talking about sending someone through to disarm it, not just...
Yeah, Superman would just hit it until it quit working.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it takes a more delicate touch than the brute nature
been,
of...
What would have been awesome is if they tried to... You know, they had... Lex Luthor had gone and found the correct type of kryptonite for his Superman by dimension hopping. It would have been hysterical if the James Woods Owlman had turned to the portal, like seeing someone coming through it, whipped out this piece of green kryptonite, and been like, "Ha!" and seen Batman, and were like, "Ah, crap."
Yeah. That would have been pretty. I was reading that the movie was originally conceived based on an aborted script for a TV movie that was going to bridge the last season of Justice League and the first season of Justice League Unlimited. Which really? Makes a lot of what's in there make sense when you think about it. Constructing a satellite and talking about expanding the team.
Yeah,
and
it is
the original six members minus Hawkgirl, who should be missing after the end of Justice League. I'm not sure if there's anything in there that prohibits it from actually still working as an continuity piece, designs aside.
No. Kevin Conroy. Sorry, I always feel the lack of Kevin Conroy.
And then, hands down, my favorite line out of the whole thing, though, is as Batman beams up, you know, a team of heroes to help him out, and, you know, "No, Aquaman, he's too powerful for you." Like, it's like, we're not sure why you brought him, because what's he going to do?
Why is Dwayne McDuffie's TV work with the Justice League so much better than his comic book work with the team?
I don't know.
Medium. I mean, sometimes the medium makes a difference. You know, you can do.
I mean, I had to drop Justice League with him on it. I mean, if you'll pardon my French, he pissed his Justice League run down his leg.
I was so looking forward to his run too. When I heard he was
coming,
I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be awesome."
Then the first four issues were basically an extended love letter to the cartoon he helped make. And it was like, "Oh," and Green Lanterns are like, "Yeah, I'm thinking of shaving my head, maybe growing a beard." And it was like, "That's hilarious." Yeah.
Great.
And it was, like, "I'm getting the Legion of Doom together and what have you." It was like, "Wait, and you did this already? What are you doing?" Like, I don't understand, honestly. I really like his work in television, not just on Justice League, but I don't know what it is that made his comic book run suck so very, very hard.
I mean, the medium can make a big difference. You know, you can. There's certain things that you can do in animation that you can't in comics, and vice versa. You know, we talk about it all the time. I mean, as far as film, you know, you can't put the spandex on film. You know, you have to do like almost the rubber suit style or something along those lines, just because it doesn't. You know, it doesn't translate.
McDuffie was always trying to push what you could get away with on Justice League as well on the cartoon. What you could get away with on a kid's cartoon. He really, really, that show really pushed the envelope as far as that was concerned. And then it's like the comic there was no daring in the comic at all. It was very stale. And then them bringing back the Milestone characters. Woo.
Yeah, and what's daring, though, in a comic is not what's daring.
That's true too.
On animation, you know. You're willing to accept different things. I mean, you know, hell, they ripped Ares in half in the comic books.
Yes, that is right.
You know what I mean? It's like, you're not going to see that on a Saturday morning. You know.
Well, you might. You're just not likely to see his liver plop down and roll up the floor.
It'll happen off screen in a silhouette.
Right, exactly.
Duffy's Fantastic Four was pretty good,
too. The Iron Patriot isn't going to stand up with it in between his forearms. He's like, "Look, I got his kidney."
His intestines and made it into a necktie.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Crisis Two-Earths, it's not really a crisis, but it's worth watching. It's good stuff.
It's really good. Go
I mean, it's named, I mean, it's named Crisis because, you know, the what's their name? The crime syndicate was introduced in a story called Crisis on Earth 3, so that's why it's called that.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, it was originally going to be called Shattered something? Dark Reflection, something like that.
I already think Crisis on Two Earths is better. So.
Yes!
You had me at Shattered. I was...
Twisted or Dark. I could have dealt with a little more exposition on what the differences were between... Not between everybody. I mean, I don't want to beleaguer the whole show with a bunch of exposition, but... Like, I would have really liked to know more, like, what's the difference between Batman and Owlman?
At least that one set
of characters, or like that and like Superman. Like, if they'd have just given me those two explanations.
He's evil, and the other guy's not. There you go.
But it doesn't, well, no, but they seem different, they sound different. It doesn't seem like, from the portrayal that I'm convinced Owlman is Bruce Wayne there.
He's not.
Well, he may not be.
I want to see what that is. What makes him Owlman?
He's supposed to be Bruce's older brother.
Per Grant Morrison's.
Right.
Morrison's recent thing. Yeah. I mean, I was actually reading, I think like McDuffie has talked about this a little on message board. It's like, for instance, I was surprised to learn Superwoman, actually Mary Marvel, not Wonder Woman.
Which makes sense in the context of Crisis on Two Earths.
I could tell it wasn't Wonder Woman, but I was kind of lost as to who it was. So I could have used a little help there in terms of enjoying the show on its own.
Yeah, considering that she calls up the rest of the Marvel family. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I never put everybody out, but a few people. Like, if at least the ones who definitely were not just, I am this person, but bad. You know, if you weren't that, I need a little bit of explanation. I don't need like I'm bad Batman. Like, okay, well, I guess you're bad Batman. You know, but if you're not bad Batman, who are you? And none of that.
Taken the time necessary to go into that much exposition, would you really have cared as much?
If they'd given me Superman, Superwoman, and Owlman. That's all I would have needed. And not a huge... It wouldn't have even had to be anything huge. It could have been, you know, a couple of lines here and there. I just felt like it was something I was waiting for and I never got.
I don't know.
I missed it, I think, is the issue.
I think so, too. But I think if it would have been there, I would have said, I wish they wouldn't have done that.
I could see that, though. Right?
10 minutes in each of them, I think I very easily could have gotten to the point where I was like, oh, my God, it's the flashback show.
It's already. But, I mean, it had a what? 90 minute? Was it 90 minute running time? I think
especially Owlman.
Yeah, he felt like there needed to be a little more there.
It's because he was the heavy of the movie. If they'd given us like, especially in the end, it was him versus Batman. So that one in particular.
Yeah,
A name, even if they just established he was or was not Bruce.
Well, I kind of like that you don't get a whole lot of information. Because, like, at the end, I mean, that's what they talk about. He says, like, if you're anything like me, then you know this is wrong. And then you just don't really know what situation kind of created Owlman, like, created Batman.
I was missing that. I felt like I wanted that, and I was missing it. They gave me a lack, and they didn't fill it.
Because, like, Owlman figure out the situation with Batman.
That information, the necessary and enjoyable information into the story as it flows. So, on the one hand, it's like, I'll admit, if they'd filled it with exposition, you can screw that up real easy, too. But at the same time, if you're missing something, you're missing something. And it's incumbent upon the writers and the directors to get the information to the audience within the context of the story. That's their job.
Yeah, and I think if they would have done that for Owlman, I think that would have worked, especially because it would have bookended well with the whole end line when Bruce says, you know, we both looked into the abyss, but you blinked. Which, I mean, that's a long-standing, you know, concept within the Batman universe that, you know, Batman stares into the abyss and staring back, blah, blah, blah. But,
well, I wouldn't be surprised to learn
that. Called Bruce Wayne little brother would have been enough.
I wouldn't be surprised to learn that there was something scripted that got cut, to be honest. It seems like
if they'd been able to recognize each other and he'd been like, oh, it's you, little brother. I think you'd even have Bruce Wayne have a moment of like, oh, shit, you're like an You're not me. You're another child of my parents.
Right. That never was on my earth.
There's no Batman here because there's an Owlman.
Yeah. So.
And somewhere, you know, Bruce Wayne is off being, you know, rich and pampered by his fortune.
Owlman is the one that you could definitely make the case for. I don't know that anybody else needed it, but given his relevance.
I didn't really think it when I was watching the film. Superman landing in like some mafioso backyard like might not have been worth it. Identifying why Superwoman had powers might have been worth discussing.
Yeah.
Because she's not Wonder Woman, even though that seems to be who she's juxtaposed with. Okay, so who the hell is she? Of any variety. Anything. She's just, I just have Superman's powers and I'm a girl. Woo! I mean, like, it was like, there was nothing there. Absolutely
well, that's
nothing.
Wonder Woman, really. So.
Yeah.
Well, she's got like, him because.
Still throws me off in the cartoons. Like, why can you fly?
Because she can. Oh, I think it's the belt, isn't it? The girdle?
Yeah, I think in that, that's in the comic now, too.
Is that the comic now, too? Oh, man.
I think so.
She's been out for years.
Wasn't she flying in? She was flying in her.
Flying is a big power to give somebody out of nowhere. Flying is a big power.
I don't know. I mean, I remember whenever the Justice League cartoon started, I did go, "Why is Wonder Woman flying?" But I'm pretty sure she's been flying for decades.
She's been flying for a long time. Yeah, she hasn't had that invisible jet for a long time.
But she's got it now.
She's got it now.
Yeah. I like that they busted out the invisible jet. But it's kind of like, why do you need a jet? You can fly.
Why do you need a car?
Why do you need a car? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so Crisis on Two Earths, please check it out, buy it, find it at your local stores. It's good.
Definitely.
So, all right, anything else for this week? Anything, and then anything to mention for next week, if no?
No, I think we got it covered.
Okay, good deal. All right, well, we'll be back, of course, next week. Hopefully, Brian will be back with us. If not, we will still be here at Fanboy versus Fanboy.